This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. In a city like Kansas City, where violent crime has become a perennial issue, it's a good thing to stay in touch with Jackson County Prosecutor Gene Peters Baker. There's a lot to talk about. Homicides in the city just topped 100 again. This has become an annual development. The city, meantime, is taking another run at a violence interrupter program based on the idea of focused deterrence. We'll find out more about that. And the prosecutor has clarified with the leaders of the police department the policy on searches of private property. There was some uncertainty following a guilty verdict of involuntary manslaughter against Detective Eric DeVolcanier. Jackson County Prosecutor Gene Peters Baker's on the line this morning. Gene, welcome back to the show. Always good to have you here.
Good morning, Steve. It's good to talk with you.
You know, a lot of people in this town get used to the idea of homicides topping 100 each year. We just did that again in Kansas City. Is there anything different about this year that separates it from other recent years where we've seen 100-plus homicides? And are there any new trends out there, Gene, like, you know, all this is being caused by gangs or drug cartels, or is it the same story one more time?
You know, this problem of homicide and violence in Kansas City, as in so many cities throughout the United States, is multi-layered, multifaceted. There's not one thing that leads to, you know, that is the cause of violence. It's multiple. But probably the biggest thing in all my studies nationally and then locally is income disparity. Income disparity is a good indicator of how much violence you're going to have. And so Kansas City has that problem. We have income disparity, therefore we have violence. And so it's a lot harder to get at than a lot of people think it would be.
You know, maybe it's obvious, but what is it about being poor that leads to violence?
I think it's a little bit more than just being poor. It's all these other layers that are on top of it. So it's generational. It is, you know, you live in impoverished areas of the city that have been overlooked for economic development. And we have also done some crime strategies over time that once we believed would be helpful, we've learned are actually, in my opinion, actually harmful. So I think kind of looking at this from a much wider lens, you know, a little bit more of that public health lens than just a law enforcement lens, helps us kind of break it down and see how we might be able to make inroads into this problem. And this year, you're right, we're going to have another high year. We are on pace right now to at least match that high that we've seen before in Kansas City.
You get a sense that, you know, everyone is weary of this problem. How do you motivate your staff to remain committed to doing its part to slow the violence and prosecute these crimes?
That part is actually not hard. It is, you know, if you work in law enforcement and you're not really about and motivated by, you know, the harms that you see in our city and knowing that they're, to a large degree, these are preventable. There's so much that we could do to stop violence if we all worked together, we all got in the boat and we rowed the same direction. So that, to me, motivation is not hard. Everybody on my staff is highly motivated to, you know, to lean into this problem and find ways, you know, to fix it or to at least lessen its harms. And I think that's probably true, you know, about, you know, the members of the police department. So we get caught up sometimes in stupid discussions, but we are all on that team, the same team with the same mission of trying to figure out how we can better reduce crime. And most importantly, in this city, violent crime.
You know, there's some percentage of Kansas Cityans who have to live with this, live inside this bubble of violence day in and day out. What do you think the west side of Kansas City doesn't understand, Gene, about what the east side of our town is experiencing with all these shootings?
I think there's so much. It's a matter of blocks that you know, separate those who rarely or are never experience a violent act within their community and those that experience it, you know, weekly So there's when it's that concentrated, you know, and you have neighborhoods that just never experience it, we do have a divide. Now, that's not to say that we can't come together and there's no way for us to all lock arms and fix this. There are, but it requires a greater understanding of what leads to crime instead of reaching for those kind of old, I find very unattractive arguments, you know, that people should just try harder, work harder, have more hope. You know, that's all really garbage. What you have to do is look at neighborhoods that are so vulnerable to this and try and figure out what is it that this neighborhood lacks that perhaps another neighborhood maybe has in abundance, and how can we infuse, you know, this area that is so rocked by crime. How can we lean into it with a helping hand, someone that cares from a caring perspective rather than a finger point perspective?
I'm visiting with Jackson County Prosecutor Gene Peters Baker. Let's turn to this violence interrupters program that I mentioned in the opening that, you know, the city hopes will cut crime eventually. The media is describing this as a new program, and I guess in some ways it is, but Gina, tell me if I'm right here. This is also a new twist on a method that's been tried before.
Well, we're in a period of time where the police department is in such a period of transition. You know, they have an interim chief. They don't have, they are accepting applications, I think, still at this point in time for, you know, the chief process. But we're still waiting, you know, for that person to come. And while I don't want them to speed through that process, I want them really to think through who's the right person, you know, to help lead us through this. We are going to need an answer to that at some point, because that chief and that chief's ideas about crime are going to be critical as to whether or not we get to continue with these types of efforts that are being built now, because, you know, the chief has a good voice in whether or not he or she will be in or out of these efforts.
So what is this violence interrupters program then?
Well, there are a few things that are happening. You know, there's something called Partners for Peace, and that is kind of a reiteration of what we used to call ourselves the KC Nova program. So that is the mayor, the police chief, the prosecutor, but also a bunch of other actors that we've learned where we failed with KC Nova. One of our failures was we didn't bring community in to our overall planning and strategy and give them real roles at the table. And so that has now been remedied, and we have community members that are seated at that table. But beyond that effort and whatever strategy, you know, we decide to deploy through that Partners for Peace program, we also have this thing called that's new and emerging in our city, which is KC360. And that is really, you know, I think a much greater public health lens to the whole idea of crime and how can we look at this from that public health perspective.
Is that the violence interrupters program that we're talking about here?
Well, I think everything we're talking about is an effort to reduce violence. So I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to as violence interrupters. We have done a variety of different things, specific and then non-specific. You know, these two groups that I've talked about, this KC360 and this Partners for Peace, are sort of the planning apparatuses for what we will do going forward to address crime. What I think is critical, and I think very hopeful for the listeners, is that all the right players are coming to these tables. And when we see that, you know, one player was left out, we bring them in. And so it is a very, very collaborative approach. And even though there was a lot of tension, perhaps between my office and the police department over the last handful of years, we maintained this collaboration. It didn't always work at its finest, because perhaps we weren't all fully committed to it. But we did believe it was necessary to keep that collaboration around a table, keep meeting. So, because it's really, really hard to get people to come sit around a table together when you all kind of separate into your own silos. So I think for Kansas City, we have a head start in that way. and we have a serious, serious problem of violence in this city. It's not a new problem, but we also have some tools and people that are there and ready to lean into it together.
You know, this KC Nova program that you've mentioned that was around for any number of years, it gradually sort of faded away, if I understand correctly, Gene, because the police chief at the time, Rick Smith, didn't support it. Am I seeing that correctly? And you're suggesting now that this idea of wrapping social services around people prone to violence, that idea is back on the table again and moving forward.
Yeah, I think that accurately describes it. I mean, when Rick Smith came in before he was police chief to, you know, to be the leader for the police department of KC Nova, we knew we were in trouble because he wasn't a believer in it. And had a lot of power to, you know, to harm the efforts. I don't blame him for the failure, what we would deem a failure of KC Nova. It is not uncommon for cities to employ focused deterrence and then realize, you know, it wanes after time. It's hard to sustain it. At that, that's the point when you don't quit. Mm-hmm. It's important that you don't quit. Kansas City quit. That you just retool and you kind of, you know, you have to keep trying different things. So we are back. We're back. And we're back with, I think, a more appropriate ethic and a wider scope of view, which is, I believe, what Kansas City so desperately needs.
These programs tend to fade. Why? Because a community is making a substantial financial commitment and maybe the payback in terms of lower homicide counts, fewer violent acts in the community don't show up right away.
Right. This is a really hard problem to get at. And even when we did get those great kind of returns back in 2014 and 15, it took us 2 years, you know, of ramping up 12 and 13 to get to that year 14. So that's just how it works. It is slow. You have to be committed to this. And when one, you know, party here, one leader is not committed, then it's not going to happen. So that's why I say this next police chief is going to be really, really critical that person, he or she, have a view of crime from a collaborative perspective, not just collaborative with the prosecutor. That's pretty basic. I mean, collaborative with community and allows community real seats at the table.
So under this new program, if you are a young person and the authorities view you as prone to violence, or maybe they suspect you've already committed violence, what kinds of services, how do authorities intervene? What happens with that young person?
Well, there is an effort going on right now that we call custom notifications that is part of one of the tools in the toolbox of focused deterrence. But that is a group of us. Usually it's a team of people that's not just law enforcement. So sometimes I will go, so a prosecutor will go, members of law enforcement, police will go, a social worker goes. And the whole idea is that we ring the doorbell of the individual that we think is causing us harm. And we have a conversation with them and we're honest with them. We're upfront with them. It's not threatening. I suppose if someone rang more than my doorbell and wanted to talk to me about my behavior,
right,
I might view it as threatening. But it is from a perspective of, hey, we want you to know we do know what you've been up to. So we tell them what we know. But we tell them we want to help you find a way out. We want to help find a way out. So for everybody, it's different. Whatever their needs are, we try and meet those. So we try and pair them with a social worker that can meet with them individually. When law enforcement leaves the room, prosecutors leave the room, and we're now out, it is a real offer of help to turn that person around. Because we all know the best way to get at this is to prevent violence from occurring. If we can prevent that next act from occurring, that next decision to pick up a gun and settle a dispute that way, then we've really, really done something. And so that's the whole idea here is, can we not just wag our finger at somebody to stop violence in our city, but to then meet them where they are and try and meet a need that they have so that maybe we'll be more successful in preventing that next act of violence.
I'm wondering how families, assuming it's a young person who is violence prone, how do they react when Jean Peters Baker and others knock on their door?
It's surprisingly very cordial. And I can tell you, we've had several of these now, and one uncle that we approached, and it was Chief Maben and I approached, said, "Man, I'm so grateful you all are here." And he said, after we talked to him a little bit, they realized, we mean what we say. This is not a trick. He said, "Man, I wish something like this was around when I was younger," because he had just gotten out of prison himself and kind of talked us through what life was like for him. And then the young man that we were there to reach wasn't there. And so he said, "You can be sure I'm going to talk to him." We've had that conversation in, a various number of ways. And family is always grateful because they need the help too. Mm-hmm. They need it. They want us to be part of that team. I feel better too, knowing a family apparatus is around this person to help them get to the next spot of where we want them to be.
Right. Are there examples of cities who have done this work and they've done it successfully that you can point to?
There are. Most recently, I think a team of folks from Kansas City went to Omaha to take a look at what Omaha has done. A team also went to Tampa Bay, Florida, to look at the violence reduction they have done. And I think what's important for the listeners to know, in both of those cities, it wasn't a one thing. It was a variety of efforts that they did that, wait for it, was like a 10-year effort to really see sustained results. And so that's why I say we got to be careful about bringing in a leader that leads with sort of be damned everybody else. I'm going to do it my way. I know what's right. This area, when we're talking about violence, we really, truly have to be collaborative. We must be collaborative. We're not, this will not work.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm visiting with Jackson County Prosecutor Jean Peters Baker. Our number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. On another front, you've been meeting weekly with Interim Police Chief Joe Maben. This is a change from the time, again, when Rick Smith was chief. What do you discuss at these meetings? And I'm guessing this is a good thing.
Of course it's good. It's good. And for me, it's really, how can we repair? There's so much misinformation. And honestly, what I've learned mostly from these meetings is how much misinformation there is about me personally. Mm-hmm. And that's really tragic, because my point of view is, we don't have to like each other truly to work together and to do a good job together. Because if we share a mission of reducing violence, then that's a big step. That's a big place to start off together in agreement. And there should be room for disagreement without people getting their feelings hurt and sort of slamming their door shut. Mm-hmm. So I just view my role much more dynamic, I guess, than, having the ability to sort of slam the door and say, "I'm not going to talk to that person anymore." I will never do that, by the way. I never did that to Rick Smith. I would never do that to anybody, because my constituents require more of me than that.
In recent months, Jean, you've talked about, in cases involving police shootings, what I'm talking about now, you've talked about a growing level of trust between your office and the police department. What's changed?
This continues to be a really tough area and a very sensitive area. But I can't really worry too much about people's feelings here that and their view of a particular case or set of cases. My job is to be as transparent as I know how to be with when the worst thing that can happen in our community, and that's that police act through the through some kind of police action, a member, a civilian ends up dead. So for me, that's going to be a moment where the public deserves some answers. They deserve as much information as you can give them, but they have to know that at the right time, if they don't know everything right away, that there's going to be a transparent process where they get to know what happened in that case. And that's the piece that I am trying to I'm trying to serve that piece, I guess, for my community, that they shouldn't have to wait 3 years to figure it out as well. You know, that we should be able to move more quickly than that.
A recent example would be the police shooting of a 31-year-old man at a gas station at East 55th Street and Prospect Avenue. This is a police shooting again of this 31-year-old man. Are you getting the information you need to do what you may or may not have to do in a case like that?
We are. So for us, it is, you know, the process is not perfect. But that night, I can tell you that I went to that scene and that we were allowed to take a look at some surveillance video at the scene that night. That really helps me, you know, kind of get my hands around what I have much more quickly, because I find myself in this place a lot, in the proverbial middle, in the middle of police on one side. And sometimes police can get really insulated here and have a hard time viewing anything they did with a lot of, you know, critique. Mm-hmm. And then the community is literally on the other side of the yellow tape, you know, needing and demanding answers right there at the yellow tape. So it's you know, uncomfortable to be the person that gets to stand in the middle, you know, but my middle is also, you know, it's also important to tell people, I can't solve all problems. I have to look at criminality. Can I get to criminality? You know, did someone break the law, break a law in Missouri, and then get through the toughest process, you know, a criminal courtroom with rules of evidence. So that's what it takes for me. It's a very, very high bar. I would hope someday that this community of Kansas City knows that there are other processes that require a little less, like employment. How do we handle that officer's employment? You know, what are some other things that we can do if it doesn't get over that very, very high bar of, you know, finding itself in a courtroom and a judge or jury hearing the case?
You know, there was some confusion recently over how police conduct searches of private property following that guilty verdict, the involuntary manslaughter verdict against police detective Eric DeVolcanier in connection with the death of Cameron Lamb in 2019. Have things been clarified since then?
Well, I don't know. Have they? I'm not the speaker for the police department here. I would really like the police department to speak for themselves, you know, in a clear voice about this issue. There was a void in that regard, and so only my voice was the one that led there, and I find that, I think that's unfortunate. I don't run this police department. I have a department that I run. And if one of my assistant prosecutors, or frankly, even, you know, a legal assistant, left a voicemail on a citizen's phone saying we weren't going to do this or that, you know, and misunderstanding basic Fourth Amendment law, someone's head would roll.
You're talking about the police captain who, in fact, did leave a message on a citizen's voicemail in connection with a search in that person's neighborhood. Yeah.
Right. Because, of course, Steve, come on. This is a report of a burglary in progress. You know what we want? What everybody should be advocating here is call the police. There's a burglary in progress. Of course, you call the police. That's what we should encourage. That's what the police should be encouraging. Because though we had this case that you mentioned, you know, where a police detective was charged and then found guilty by a judge, nothing changed. Nothing changed. In the area of the Fourth Amendment, that case has made no national, you know, big trends in the Fourth Amendment law. Do you know why, Steve? It was the same law on December the 3rd of 2019 when Cameron Lamb was killed in his garage. It's the same law that exists today. There is nothing new changed regarding the Fourth Amendment.
Jean, just to be clear, are you suggesting here that the police are still reticent, they're still resisting when it comes to this idea of responding to a homeowner's phone call in the middle of the night that a burglary might be in process in their neighborhood?
I sure hope not, but I don't know that it was a real clear voice, you know, on this issue. So let's try and make it clearer, you know, for anybody who might be listening. When there's a crime in progress, please call the police. That's, you know, that's what a good community does. Mm-hmm. You know, we try and solve our problems through the system. Yes, imperfect system, but yet a system that we all utilize. That's, by the way, the only way that case can get to me for prosecution is if police respond. And if the police don't feel comfortable going in, you can knock on the door. You could just ring the doorbell and say, hey, can I come in? You could wait outside the door and see if someone comes out with an arm full of things that don't belong to them. You could ask them, hey, are those your things, sir? There's a whole lot of things you could do. Okay. And so we want to encourage people, call the police. Please call the police. And police, if you're listening, respond.
Gene, I want to touch two other quick issues here before I lose you. There's a ballot initiative in Missouri in November about legalizing recreational marijuana. I know you've stopped prosecuting possession cases in Jackson County some time ago, but what about folks who faced possession charges stemming from cases that came down years ago? Is there a chance that those cases will be expunged here if this ballot initiative would wind up passing?
The short answer to that is yes. That's the way the language reads. The longer answer is that's a lot harder to do than the way the ballot language reads. So there's a lot of question about how that could be done. And so I haven't figured that out yet. So we'll wait and see what happens in November. But I want to just go back and correct you on one thing. My office does not have a policy that says we will not prosecute possession cases, even of marijuana. There's certain amounts that we cannot get juries to, you know, to seat it on. But I continue to tell police, if that person is connected to violence, bring me that case.
I got you.
If that person is a neighborhood nuisance, bring me the case. I just need a little bit more, though, to get through the very high bar that we have in Jackson County to get a case through a system and win.
And just finally, you've also been focused on the theft of catalytic converters, and there's been a lot of those of late. What have you done on that front, just in 30 seconds or so, Gene?
Well, one place we started working together is in Westport, where there have been some thefts of catalytic converters, not just of you know, some of the people who work there who can't afford to have that crime happen to them. So we have formed a little team where we are trying to address that particular crime and what we can do to be much more proactive, especially in Westport. But we want to look at other areas of the city too, where that is a particularly big problem.
Right.
So we're all in. We're all in to kind of, you know, serve all communities, but also work with police to see how we can get those cases and do a better job getting them to courtrooms.
That's Jackson County Prosecutor Gene Peters-Baker. Gene, I always appreciate you sharing your time with us. Thanks so much.
Anytime, Steve.
You
Thank
bet.
You.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.